Back together again, you and I chatting it up on a fine Tuesday-style program, the 23rd of June, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. I highlighted a recent episode of New York City that I think illustrates just how fractured we've become as a society. Blogger and columnist Chris Powell joined us to talk about Governor Ned Lamont's proposed Medicaid penalty for big state employers, while Megan Portfolio dropped by from the Yankee Institute. She discussed some new state EBT SNAP card concerns.
So I'm looking around, you know, poking around here, see what to lead with today. And we've got a couple of guests coming up, and we've got a whole bunch of stuff right here at WICC, 600 AM, 95.9 FM, and of course online, voiceofct.com. I was poking over the stuff locally and nationally, and something really hit me today. I guess something really stuck out with me today on this, what is this? This is a Tuesday the 23rd. Yes, Tuesday the 23rd right here at WICC. Man, our politics are screwed up. They're broken, and it happens nationally. It happens locally. And, you know, the notion of how we carry ourselves here is really starting to, maybe not starting to concern me. Some of this, though, is getting ridiculous. And there's an example out there that's really making the rounds across the country, but it may be New York, it could be Boston, it could be Hartford, it could be New Haven, it could be Bridgeport, but something to think about here. I don't know whether you saw this story. Comes out of New York City, and a pretty visible member of Congress, Dan Goldman. He's a U.S. representative from New York City. He's Jewish, and he's calling it sad. Now, get this. Now, there's an important distinction here. Law in the U.S. does allow people to, in some way, shape, or form, discriminate, but not really. You cannot discriminate against somebody because, you know, with race, with sexual orientation, religion, or whatever. But you have a right, as been established by the courts, of choosing maybe on other bases who you want to serve and who you don't want to serve. And Dan Goldman is calling it sad that a coffee shop in his city in Brooklyn, New York, apparently banned him with a social media post amid a heated Democratic Party election that has focused, says here in CNN, on Israel's continuing war in Gaza. Speaking to CNN, Goldman addressed his experience at what was called the Poetica Coffee, which used its branded social media account to post a photo of Goldman with a receipt of a refund, according to screenshots of the shop's post that were widely shared on Monday. In fact, this has jarred so many people here now that this Poetica coffee shop has since taken down its Instagram page. And the since-deleted post from Poetica Coffee refers to AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, saying to Goldman, "We don't need your money. It's probably coming from AIPAC anyways." The post goes on to read, quote, "Hey, Congressman Dan Goldman, we see that you stopped by our coffee shop today for a coffee. Did you see how it doesn't taste like genocide juice? Or are you still having a hard time telling the difference?" CNN reaching out to Poetica Coffee for a comment. Goldman facing a big challenge Tuesday from former city comptroller Brad Lander, on and on and on, backed by New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani. Look, I don't have to get into all the minutiae here, but listen, it's all right to differ with somebody politically. And this is the kind of stuff I've been talking about now. This is just getting a little nuts. All right. This is just getting a little crazy here when the disagreement goes to public shaming. And yeah, I mean, it's obviously okay when you have disagreements with somebody politically, and you own a business, and you differ with that person, but then the public shaming kicks in. And that's when I think we're in big trouble. This has to stop. So I ask you this to kick off the festivities today at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. We've got a load of responses to this already. And I just use the Dan Goldman thing because it's front and center now, and I'm sure 2 days from now there'll be another example about this. But what does it say about our society? This is our question for the day. We'll get into the other stuff later on. But this was top of mind as I read this. What does it say about our society when some private businesses refuse to serve customers due to their political beliefs, or they shame them, or they put a spotlight on them? Now, I know in a sense it's probably freedom of speech. I get it. But do we have to pump the brakes here? Do we have to get away from everything AIPAC is good or bad? Everything Israel is good or bad? Everything Gaza is good or bad? Everything Iran is good or bad? Now, listen, it's okay to have these vibrant sorts of debates here. That's good. That's vibrant for a free society here. But what does it say now, especially with the, not even the advent, but, social media in full gear, when now you can not only say something snide to somebody, you can then post it on social media and keep going with the meme of genocide this and that and genocide this and that. So what do you think here? You may hear me and say, well, listen, it is what it is, man. You know, freedom of speech, Paul. You know, aren't you a proponent? They may be saying to me, a freedom of speech, and hey, don't apologize. You hear me, the guy in the afternoon, say to people, stop apologizing. I'm not saying anybody should apologizing here, but man, oh man, when does it start to slow down, right? And I know you can blame Trump all you want. He does stuff where, you know, I sit there and I shake my heads, but man, oh man, it's enough. It's enough. The guy goes in for a cup of coffee, and he mentions in the story that he had a very nice conversation, very nice exchange from one of the baristas there who had a hijab on, so obviously she was of Middle Eastern extraction. But apparently that wasn't good enough for these people who own this coffee shop, and I guess now you can use your business to shame people, I guess. I don't know. Am I overreading this, or are we really in up-you-know-what's creek here? I know you can say it with the TV show, but I'm not going to. 203. We got a great text message here. Coming up right here, I'll give that to you and more on WICC. So starting today with another story, another maybe of how our politics are just completely out of control, from world bodies to the U.S., to the State House here, to maybe cities like Bridgeport, Hartford, and New Haven. And I'm not trying to, in any way, shape, or form, paint with a broad brush here. But we have another scenario here not too far from us in Manhattan. Dan Goldman, Jewish member of the House, apparently went to this coffee shop, this Poetica coffee shop, and had a nice conversation with one of the baristas there who seemed to be of Middle Eastern descent. And then the coffee shop started in Brooklyn, bad-mouthing this guy and banning a member of Congress, which, listen, legally, as long as you're not doing that based on national origin, sex, creed, color, religion, you know, private employers can serve who they want to. And there have been some famous court cases about this. We have a person texting in right now, and this is exactly what I was thinking about. This person, he/she, saying, hey, Paul, you know, it's funny when the conservative Republican Christian bakery, remember that? They didn't want to make that cake for the LGBTQ customer, and it became national news. Everybody appalled. But when it's flipped around the other way, doesn't it seem like we don't have the same level of dissent being discussed? Right? So when does this change? When does anybody and everybody? Does it change when Trump leaves? Is that what it is? Are we suddenly going to have pixie dust from on high and saying, you know, with them, oh, you know, with the angels on high? and the angelic choir, are they going to say, well, now we're back to what it is? Or is this slow chugging transformation of the progressive left really going to poison the dialogue here in this country? So I set up the first of our calls, our questions today, which is already getting a good amount of responses here at Voice of CT on Facebook, facebook.com/Voice of CT. What does it say about our society when some private businesses refuse to serve customers because of their political beliefs? Now, you may say, well, Paul, their political beliefs are tied to maybe wars and killing of people. I guess. And again, Congressman Goldman, I guess, gets AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, gets AIPAC donations. All right. Well, there are donations on every side here. Is this, and again, I'm not saying that anybody's breaking the law here. I'm not. But when does this stop? I mean, enough. Stop. I love to... You know, we get into it on this show every day, 2 to 6, right here in the afternoons on WICC. We tend to get into it a little bit, maybe a little more boisterously and vociferously than some of the other shows here on the station. It's one of the reasons I was brought in here to kind of, you know, stir the pot a little bit and let you know what I think, and but keep it open to folks like you. But when does it get too much? And it's okay to satirize, I think. It's okay to get people up there and chugging and laughing and stuff like this. Because what's my mantra now become? Well, hey, you know, in the end, it's not going to matter. Our voter registration card is not going to matter. But maybe how we, geez, I don't know, maybe how we treat people. Maybe, possibly, eh? So what is it? And would you, if you were running a business, let's say you were running that coffee shop in New York City, and a New York far-left Democrat comes in and he's ordering a coffee and just trudging along and talking to people there by what CNN said, and then all of a sudden, I guess the bosses find out, and they start talking SH about him. I mean, in the end, what does that accomplish? Or are you, or do these people try to, you know, muscle into their... you know, their loyalty, or their, you know, their far right bona fides and their far left bona fides, when while in the whole process here, the whole thing is kind of sort of being poisoned, is it not? And I'm not saying we can't sit here and have good, frank discussions, but how, for the discussion thing, don't you, instead of shaming people, and instead of, you know, using social media and the power of being able to click or point or tap your phone or click your mouse and send your sentiments all over the world and besmirching these people, is that not the right thing to do? Or maybe the better thing to do would be to say, hey, Congressman, you know, disagree with you, but enjoy your coffee. And you know what? Let's come back and talk here. It seems to me that a lot of people, and I may be wrong here, and you tell me, at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Are we kowtowing to the wrong contingent here? Are we so quick to try and score points? Well, if he or she says that, then I'm going to call him a libtard. Or if he or she says that, I'm going to call him a right-wing gun nut or a baby killer or something like that. Because it seems to me this proselytizing here of just who's wearing the right uniform and for what code here is crazy. And I know what you're going to say. Well, you know what? This dates back to Nazi Germany and the Jews in Germany and the Reichstag and the Third Reich. All right. Yeah, please. I get you. I understand where you're trying to go here. It's been around for decades. I get it. But, man, now with social media, it is, I'm telling you, man, this is just out of hand. But you knew that, right? You knew that. So you tell me. I want to start this and start with this and go a little more with this, because this is just, I mean, I had to get this off my chest today, because I'm reading this. And now when a member of Congress simply goes in to get a coffee and you have to badmouth this guy and align him with genocide. That's the word of the day. Genocide. Yeah. How about the word of the day? October 7th. How about that? traffic and weather together right here on WICC. We like to check in with this gentleman about once a month or so. He's been a longtime columnist, blogger, newspaper guy in the state. Chris Powell joins us. Check out ChrisPowellColumn.com, ChrisPowellColumn.com. And Mr. Powell, good afternoon, sir, and how might you be on this fine Tuesday?
Well, I think when we're done, I'm going to ask my doctor if a stiff drink is right for me.
Several of them. Chris, I'm not surprised here in your latest column that's going to be out tomorrow for people who follow along and those who don't. You're not really impressed with something the governor was actually here at WICC proposing on the Lisa Wexler show yesterday, a little bit of a tax penalty on some of these big businesses, per head, $1,000 to say, hey, you should be doing better with health care and not employing a lot of people who are on the Medicaid program, which is a state burden.
Yeah, and I'm not sure there really are all that many large companies employing people who can't get health insurance, but I found a lot of things that the governor said in his proposal objectionable. I mean, first he was saying that these big companies force people to go without medical insurance. It's nonsense. The companies don't force them to go without medical insurance. They don't force them to work for any particular company. I mean, labor is free to do what it wants in Connecticut. The reason I think many companies don't provide medical insurance to their lower paid people is because the people are in jobs where they don't produce enough of value to cover both their wages and insurance. I think if they had better job skills than you get just by coming out of the average high school in Connecticut, you'd probably be able to get a better job with insurance. But the governor was hypocritical in several respects. If he thinks the lack of insurance by some employers is a problem, the Medicaid insurance that Connecticut provides to the poor is pretty crappy as well. It's been a running issue in Connecticut for a few years now, how many doctors will not take Medicaid patients in Connecticut because the reimbursements are so small, and many Medicaid recipients can't get timely treatment, even if they can find a doctor that will take Medicaid. Now, if big companies' insurance is bad or lack of insurance is bad, Medicaid from the state of Connecticut isn't that much better for many people. I think the hypocrisy of the governor's proposal was evident in the press release he put out about it. If you looked into the body of the press release, you find out his proposal would exempt the social service agencies that have contracts with state government. So the governor doesn't want to pay for better insurance for the social service agency employees that are doing government welfare work. I mean, so, you know, he's reacting just like a big capitalist employer. He doesn't want to give the state's own social work people better insurance. But probably the bigger thing about it, Paul, there's been a line of thought in liberalism and in the Democratic Party generally for decades now that we ought to be breaking the link between employment and insurance. That I think's generally the progressive line on this issue. People shouldn't be stuck in a job they don't like because it's their only practical way of getting adequate health insurance for themselves and their family. That was the genesis of Obamacare. The Affordable Care Act was to increase insurance options for individuals so they weren't so tied to their employer. That's the rationale for the so-called public option, is to liberate people from the medical insurance or lack of medical insurance provided by their employer. But here with Lamont's proposal, he's basically proposing to tighten the link between employment and insurance. And even as he made this proposal, he's been airing a commercial that says he favors having Connecticut develop a universal health insurance system. Yeah. Well, you know, which is it? Does he want the universal system where everybody gets covered regardless of his employment? Or, you know, does he want to stick people with their employers and tax the employers extra for not giving insurance? I mean, it's none of this makes sense.
And I had to laugh with Josh Elliott there, and his response I thought was pretty good. Well, he's finally coming around to, you know, to my side on this. Chris, do you think, and we've talked about this before, and I maintain it's going to be closer than people think. Do you think the Lamont people and the establishment Democrats, are they getting a little too worried here about Josh Elliott, maybe with not a full Mamdani moment, but do you think that they're starting to sweat a little bit or not?
They're certainly acting as if they're sweating. They're setting the governor up to make striking a lot of leftist poses. John Larson in the first district certainly looks terrified of the leftists in the Democratic Party in the forthcoming primary, even though his main challenger, former Hartford Mayor Luke Bronin, isn't particularly leftist at all. We're going to find out. I mean, certainly from, you know, what's in the public prints and on the air and TV suggests that the Democratic Party in Connecticut is, you know, looking for Stalin or Lenin or something. I mean, I hope it is not really as crazy left as it seems, but certainly.
So wait a minute, Chris. Wait a minute. You mean they've given up on Che Guevara? Is that what you're telling?
Well, I don't know that. I don't know they've given up on any leftists. It's just the Democratic campaign suggests that the candidates believe that the far left, the far, far left, is the majority in the Democratic Party now in Connecticut, or at least the majority among the voters, the Democrats who are likely to vote in the primaries. I don't know. We're gonna find out if there's any moderate Democrats left.
Yeah, and finally, Chris, in the couple of minutes we have left, something that I have been saying for the past couple of years here, because I think it's the only way to change it, and now it's nice that Josh Elliott has adopted one of my proposals. No, but seriously, with this all the controversy over the public benefits charge and the electric bills, this is never going to change. The prices are going to keep going up no matter what. But Josh Elliott says he, if elected, would explore ways to do what basically my hometown does and a couple of other districts in the state. They own their own power grid and they buy their own power, and like a lot of other big cities around the country, they are their own municipal nonprofit once every all the costs are paid of power companies. What do you think of that?
Well, it's funny. I just finished writing a few minutes ago about this this issue. I have no problem with public ownership of utilities if you're starting from scratch. If you're starting from the position we're here in Connecticut, where we've got two very big regional electric utilities and five municipally owned utilities, then you got a problem. There's so many complications here. You have to buy out the utility system. If you do that, then you take them off the tax rolls, so all the municipalities lose their biggest property taxpayer. You've got to have a town develop an electrical distribution staff where you have no expertise. I'm not saying it can't be done, but you know, we certainly don't need 169 electric utilities in Connecticut. We could do with a few more municipal ones, I suppose. Yeah. But we can't afford to, you know, break up the grid that way. The municipal utilities, they function only because they are able to connect to the regional systems.
Yeah, sure.
They don't generate their own electricity for the most part. They rely on the service they get from the regional systems. This might be an issue that could be worked out and developed, but with all the problems we have right now, I mean, schools that don't educate, that are still segregated, a creaky transportation system, you know, roaring inflation. Are we really want to spend the next several years trying to work out a public power system? It's not the most urgent problem we've got in the state right now.
Yeah, Chris Powell. Chris Powell Column. Check it out, chrispowellcolumn.com. Chris, as always, thank you for the cogent thoughts. I appreciate it. Have a happy rest of the week, and we'll chat next month. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye.
All right, there you go. All right, she's back and better than ever with every ensuing appearance here on WICC. She writes the Hartford Portfolio blog for the fine folks at the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. The one and only Megan Portfolio joins us on a Tuesday. Meg, how are you?
Oh, so much better, and I missed you last week.
Well, I missed you, too. Yes, yes.
I was texting Christian. I'm like, where's Paul?
No, you know, Paul's here. He's in one flabby piece, but here I am. So,
oh,
anyway.
Thank goodness.
Yes, 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 because world markets were quivering. Hey, what do we have? More credit card funny business here? What do we have here this week in your hopper?
Well, I had done a Freedom of Information request with the Department of Social Services, and I was asking for transactions being done through the Connecticut EBT cards, and I wanted them to break it down by city and state. So they came back with, it took a little bit, but they did come back with, I got information from July 2022 through October 2024. Yeah. And $7.2 million of these cash transactions actually occurred out of the state. It was a little bit over 73,000 individual transactions that didn't even occur in Connecticut.
Now, when you say EBT cards, you mean SNAP cards?
No, so they... From what I understand, there's one card, and this one card manages both programs. So if you go to the grocery store, you either select SNAP, which is your food. It's, you know, you can only use it at eligible places for eligible products. And then there's the EBT for cash. So you can actually use that portion of the card to do, you know, when you go, when you and I go to the grocery store, you can get cash back. So you can do it through the register, or you can do it through the ATM. So what was interesting is a lot of the transactions took place on border states, Massachusetts and New York, and some of that is probably 100% legit. You know, people free. I do it myself. I'll go across the border if I'm up there to maybe get gas or booze because it's cheaper elsewhere.
Or weed. But go
ahead. This is where I started asking questions. There was a lot of transactions in Florida, in, you know, vacation areas of Florida, like Orlando. There were 42 transactions in Hawaii, Puerto Rico, Guam, Alaska, the Virgin Islands. And these are cash transactions. So there's really no way to track them once the person that's using the card has that cash.
So there's no way. So technically there's nothing against somebody using this out of state?
Absolutely not. Because, well, think about it. You know, people have to go to funerals, weddings, maybe take care for a loved one. So just because you have an EBT card doesn't mean you have to be a prisoner to Connecticut. Like, you and I are prisoners at Connecticut because of all of our taxes, but you're not held prisoner here. You can freely move around the country and use your card. But just because someone or a card was used in Hawaii, the question isn't why did they do it. It's like, the question really should be is, does our system have internal mechanisms to be able to track, like, and identify, you know, weird patterns? Because not every transaction is fraud. There's this big scam called skimming. And what these fraudsters do is they basically take a carbon copy of people's cards. And this is a problem because my tax dollars are being used to fund these EBT cards. I want that money to be going toward the people that really need it. I'm like, someone's grandmother, someone's grandfather may be on assistance because they're on fixed income. And if these fraudsters come in and wipe out their card, there's no recourse. There was, for a period of time, the federal government, was making up a difference and refunding that money, but that program doesn't exist anymore. So if someone, you know, some single mom who needs this card for their kids to eat has it stolen, they can get a new card. But they're SOL, and that's a big problem.
Interesting. So, yeah, so in other words, skimming is in stealing the number of the card, maybe at at an unscrupulous retailer, or some of these card skimmers that they put on gasoline pumps and at big box, big box grocery stores and other establishments there.
So they could be completely wiping out someone's benefits.
Interesting.
And then they're done. I mean, they're done for the month. They got to wait until, you know, their card gets replenished.
And we have no way to even raise a red flag on that.
Not as far as I can tell. What the state did do, and I give them some credit for this, is they put an option on their apps so they can go in and they can actually block out-of-state transfers. But you have to actually opt into that. What I found in some other states, because this is not a Connecticut issue. This happens everywhere. Some states have started to either issue the chip cards.
Yeah.
Massachusetts is starting that. But chip cards are expensive, so I don't know if we have it in our budget to go that route.
Lord knows we don't spend money. We can't do that. No, no, Lord knows. Lord knows.
But another option would be, instead of opting in, have it be the default, because some states are doing this, where it's the default. You cannot use this card for online purchases or out of state. The person who has the card to physically go in and turn it on. And I think that's a better option if the state doesn't want to go the route with the chip. Having them actually opt in and taking more responsibility and being allowed to take more responsibility for their card and to ensure that they're getting the benefits is the way to go.
Megan Portfolio here talking about her latest piece, Connecticut keeps discovering the same credit card scandal. Here's how to stop the next. Oh, no, that was. I'm sorry. Let me get the right one here. This is the welfare card. Man, you're all over the place with a. What's up with this? It's raining Megan here. Connecticut keeps discovering the same credit card scandal. Here's how to stop the next one.
Oh, yes. I didn't want to go full into that week because I'm doing a series on it. So Yankee Institute, I mean, we just keep seeing over and over and over again in the news lately, someone's misusing their P card, whether it's at the state level or it's a municipal or nonprofits that take money from the state. And there's no way for the public to actually see this and catch this. They have to rely on, you know, people like me and other reporters to get this information. But sometimes it's impossible. I've been trying to get from Middletown their basically just their checkbook to make it simple. And it's celebrated your birthday. I can't even get them to call me back. So there's no way for the public or even the press to hold these people accountable. So we're actually working on a whole proposal to make this information available because of all this P card abuse that's going on.
Hey, let me ask you something. Who decided to go to blue from the red page here? I'm looking at this now, and I knew I spotted something a little different there. What's with the blue?
Oh, it's above my pay grade, but it just it's always good to refresh. I think it's a lot easier on the eyes and easier to read. I love it.
It is. It's very nice.
And I think we weren't doing a full rebrand, but it's always good to refresh things. And I the second I uploaded my first article, oh my goodness, this looks so much better. It doesn't look as cheesy, and it's just so much easier to read.
Yeah, it is cool. So, folks, check it out, the new blue page of the Hartford Portfolio. The main thing that we talked about here, Connecticut welfare cards. Again, this is not illegal, but it does
say,
hey,
not implying that every transaction is fraud or every recipient is a fraudster, but there is fraud, and it doesn't mean it's the recipient. It could be they're being victims of, this is a consumer protection issue as well as a transparency issue. So I'm not trying to, put shade on, people that use EBT. I want them to be protected.
Yeah. Yeah, but as you say, that because we don't have a mechanism to reload the cards. So Connecticut
and
welfare,
I want the taxpayers to be protected as well, Paul.
Welfare cards used in Hawaii, Guam, and across the U.S. Record show, there's this one convenience store in Guam. We got to go there. That's what it is.
Well, in Marina Del Rey in California, which is a super ritzy area, there was one transaction, a cash withdrawal, $3,000.
Oh, come on.
That raises flags.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
You should, because I know when you call, they listen. You got to start banging on the walls here as some key members in the General Assembly saying, hey, this isn't a nonpartisan thing here. We got to do something about this.
I agree. I did actually get very good reception to the article from some lawmakers that emailed me.
Excellent.
I don't want to put them on blast on the air, but I did get some bipartisan interest on it.
So we're going to call you the Catalyst, Megan the Catalyst Portfolio. There you go, right there.
Oh, I like that.
You like
Do
that?
I get a
All
theme
right.
song?
Well, I'll work on that. I'll have the crack production.
Something
Darth
Vader-ish. I want to
kind
of come off I'm tough.
Like you're a video game character. Oh, what a shock there. Megan Portfolio is with us every Tuesday at about around 5:15. Meg, thanks. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll chat next time around. Thanks.
All right. Bye, Paul.
All right, there you go. Megan Portfolio there.